This is the Sean Hannity Show podcast.
Yes, it is the Sean Hannity Show, kicking off the Memorial Day weekend. I am Rose Tennant, sitting in for Sean, and I'm coming to you from the WPGB studios right here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where we do the Quinn and Rose Show every weekday morning. I want to say thanks to Lauren and Jonathan and the awesome Jason over there in New York City studios. And of course, our Stacy here with me in Pittsburgh and our engineer, Lou. You can check me out at roseunplugged.com. And I have to plug Lauren for just a second because, you know, she's a very inspiring young lady and she's got a great timely piece right now for Memorial Day. It's about a young man who was killed in action at the age of 21. You can find this very moving story at Hannity.com. So I would encourage you to check it out. Lauren, you have a great, great style in writing. I'm really impressed with that. Someone else who has a great writing style is a favorite of mine from the American Spectator. He's a former member of the Ronald Reagan administration. He's a journalist, author, and political strategist right here in Pennsylvania. Please welcome Jeffrey Lord. How are you, Jeffrey?
I'm just fine. Pennsylvania's favorite Rose. How are you?
That's right, doggone it. I'm doing good, too. Thanks. Listen, you just recently did a story for the American Spectator. It was Obama and the IRS, The Smoking Gun. And in it, you talked about a lot about Colleen Kelly. Now, she's the president of the National Treasury Employees Union, and they are, quite frankly, very anti-Tea Party. And I thought it was fascinating, some of the information that you had dug up about Colleen Kelly. Now, she's been to the White House on a couple of occasions, hasn't she?
Many occasions. She has a very, she has incredible access to the White House. The union, of course, endorsed President Obama in 2008 and 2012. And she said shortly thereafter in an interview in a paper that you might be familiar with called the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Yes, I am.
That she was looking for, that her, what she was about with the Obama administration was collaboration, and that's a quote, and also a quote, partnership. And as it happened, she visited the White House the day before the IRS set out in earnest to go after the Tea Party candidates. Now, I asked the question in the article, why was she there? And we now have an answer from Ms. Kelly that she was there for something called a workforce flexibility meeting that involved 200-some-odd people and all of this kind of thing. The point here is that there is a solid relationship between the administration and this union. Now, mm-hmm. on the surface, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. However, what we have here is the campaign contributions are coming from IRS employees.
Yeah.
This union basically has the run of the place at the IRS. They get to decide, who gets to have a BlackBerry and who doesn't. What's the size of your office space and all of this kind of thing. So they have the run of the place at the IRS. Employees and they say voluntary, and I will put voluntary in quotes because if you're dealing with a union that's got control over your life as an IRS agent, I imagine you're going to be feeling some obligation here.
Absolutely, but you know, isn't that a conflict of interest too? I mean, I have a real problem with government employees. They're using these funds to advance, well, their politics, and then of course this administration's politics as well.
That's right, and I'll give you an exact example of how this works. I'm sure outside of Vermont, Peter Welch is not very familiar. He, and I'm just picking him at random here.
Okay.
He is a Democratic congressman from Vermont, and he sits on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. This is the one that's investigating the IRS at this moment. He has received a contribution from this union of IRS employees to the tune of $1,000. Goes a long way in Vermont. On March 2nd of 2012, he wrote a letter to the now famous IRS Commissioner Douglas Shulman saying, "We write to urge the Internal Revenue Service to investigate whether any groups qualifying as social welfare organizations under Section 504C3 of the Federal Tax Code are improperly engaged in political campaign activity." Now, it was this letter, and there were many more coming from other members, Democratic members of Congress. This goes into the IRS. The IRS then launches these investigations and these audits. And so, as you can see here, it's sort of like a closed loop. You've got the IRS playing the role of, they're both the player on the field and they're the referee. They're giving their money to people like Mr. Welch. Mr. Welch writes the letters to the IRS demanding investigations of conservative groups. The IRS agents, who are members of the union who gave him the money, then investigate or hold up the process, et cetera. This is all about intimidation, and it's done on a partisan basis. And I think I heard some reference to in the beginning of your show about the government and the people. It's the people fear government. It's tyranny.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the irony here, Rose, is, you know, unless you're a really bad guy in America, nobody fears the FBI and nobody fears like the CIA and nobody fears the Pittsburgh Police Department. Everybody in America fears the IRS.
Right.
It doesn't make any difference who you are. You could be Donald Trump, or you could be just, you know, Josette Smith from Pittsburgh. And everybody has this, you know, thing in their head that this government agency has this power to come after you and ruin you.
Well, and you and I were talking about this before, and, you know, I was telling you that our worst fears are now confirmed about the IRS.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. That's what's happening here. And this, I can only say, this is a whole can of worms here that is just endless here in terms of its depth. And one of the things that I think it was interesting today.
Wait, before we get to that, don't forget what you want to say, because there's something I want to point out. I know that, you know, that Colleen Kelly said that she was at the White House for something that had absolutely nothing to do with whether or not they were going to focus on the Tea Party. Yet, the very next day, I mean, this is the only thing that really concerns me, is the timing of all of this. Because
right.
I think it was the very next day that those directives went forward. In terms of really focusing in on the Tea Party organizations, the ultra conservative organizations, so that bothers me a lot.
As
I mean,
well,
she can say all
should.
She wants about why she was there, but isn't it ironic that the very next day those directives went out?
Exactly, and I will tell you, a television station, a Fox television station, a local station in Cincinnati, I believe, got its hands on an IRS phone directory or directory of some kind there in the Cincinnati office. And they have been able to pinpoint the exact agents who were involved in this. Now, I can, you know, fairly well imagine that these people are all members of this union.
Right.
So this is the problem here, is that you've got people in this union, and Ms. Kelly is repeatedly on record going after the Tea Party and Republicans and all that kind of thing. And I frankly don't care. I mean, she's got her free speech rights. I mean, that's perfectly fine. The problem here is this is the IRS, and the pressure comes from the top down, and the attitude led by the president is, you know, that the Tea Party are bad people. And so, of course, the squeeze gets put on people using the IRS, and this union is, you know, clearly playing a role in this.
It is, and I think we need to point out that this is the same union whose employee members were being urged by, in 2012, Chuck Schumer, Franken, Baucus, and others to target Tea Party and other conservative groups. I mean, this is that union. This is
it. That is correct. That is correct. You know, and I frankly, this was a surprise to me when I began to look into this. I was on a show with Larry Kudlow, who used to work with in the Reagan administration. He now has a show on CNBC. And Larry Kudlow is a very experienced economist and very influential and knowledgeable about matters financial. And he said that he himself always thought of the IRS as nothing but, you know, a bunch of accountants. He says, and only now, because of what I'm looking into here, do I realize, that you've got this very, very powerful left-wing union, you know, with the run of the place.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what makes this so dangerous.
Let's talk about Douglas Shulman. He's the ex-IRS commissioner, as you know. We find out that he's been to the White House 118 times. That's a lot of times.
Exactly. And I learned yesterday that one of those times in, I think it was in, I don't have the date in front of me here, I think it was in 2010,
maybe
he had been in the White House. And now, mind you, his answer was to this when he was asked, oh, he'd been to the White House Easter egg roll.
Now,
I've been to the White House Easter egg roll, you know, and you get a ticket and all this kind of thing. But he'd been there 118 times, so hardly that's, you know, the
at least 117 other than the Easter egg roll. Okay?
Right. So I got this information and checked, and on this one occasion, On one day in October, he was in the office of Cass Sunstein, who was the very prominent economic advisor to the president. Then the next day, he's in the Oval Office, according to the White House logs themselves, having a meeting with the president. Now, that's not the White House Easter egg roll.
No.
And so, you know, we have to have information here about what was discussed here. I mean, there is just, and the White House keeps backing down and changing their story. This does become, I wrote a column yesterday on Jay Carney and how he is becoming more and more like Ron Ziegler, the Nixon press secretary, who would, you know, issue these statements and then come out and say, oh, well, now they're inoperable. This is what's going on here, is that they are, you know, they put out this information, they say, no, we didn't do this, and then they come back and somebody finds out that, well, yes, they did do this and all of this kind of thing. I mean, this is pretty bad stuff.
Yeah. You know, by the way, you brought up Carney. He said that he enjoyed the intensity of the press conferences. That's what you have to say? You're enjoying the intensity? We're talking about scandals here. We're talking about abuse of power. We're talking about intimidation. And you're saying that you're enjoying the intensity of the press conferences? Oh, my gosh.
Exactly. I mean, I have been, as your Pennsylvania audience will certainly know, I was in my youthful days a press secretary for someone they all remember as well, and that was Senator John Hines.
Yes, loved him.
And, you know, I can tell you that, you know, your purpose as a press secretary is to answer the questions of the press and to enlighten folks as to what's going on here. It's not to get into some sort of combative role here where you're playing a game here. I mean, this is very, very serious business. Somebody most probably is going to go to jail here.
Hey, so we have to talk offline because I actually was friends with a lot of people that worked for Hines and was very involved at the Times. So we probably know a lot of the same people.
I know we do.
Listen, by the way, when you were talking about Douglas Shulman, you know, the thing is, if you met with the president of the United States of America, wouldn't you remember that?
Of course I would.
I don't care which president it was. I'd remember.
Of course you would. And again, remember, this is the IRS commissioner. Just imagine if you or any of your listeners in Pittsburgh or Sean's listeners across America got an inquiry from the IRS and said, oh, well, I can't remember. I'll get back to you at some point. Or, gee, I'm just not sure. I don't recall. Well, we all know what would happen. Yeah. We all know what would happen. I mean, the IRS doesn't take that kind of response from anybody. But yet, here we are in a situation where one of these people, after another, whether it's Douglas Shulman or Stephen Miller, the acting commissioner, or whether it's this Lois Lerner, I mean, who's now taking the fifth.
Oh, yes. I love, well, not just that, but she was asked to resign, kind of like a, hey, resign or quit, could you please? And she refuses, so they keep her. I mean, we're going to be paying now for her to stay on leave. I don't know how long that's going to be. It's like vacation by us. Here, thank you very much.
That's right. Well, you know, Sean's friend and my friend Mark Levin wrote this great book called Liberty and Tyranny a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And what he describes in there, among other things, is the mentality of arrogance of power that goes on here. And you couldn't find better exemplars of this than these people who have been coming in front of this committee here in the last week. I mean, it truly is astonishing just how arrogant they really are.
Well, and the thing is, let's look at it this way. If my general manager asked my program director questions about how he's running our station, my program director isn't going to claim the Fifth Amendment privileges. I mean, you only do that if you think down the road that there's going to be a problem or criminal charges could be brought.
That's right. I mean, and that's a private business. And there is no private business in America that's run this way. Or if it is run this way, it goes out of business.
Yes.
This is just mind-boggling the attitude that's being displayed.
I'm starting to get a little too old for all of this, too.
And the phrase I like the best is when they refer to this as quote-unquote customer service.
Well, you know, they should take this comedy act on the road, okay? Seriously.
Exactly.
They really should. Hey, listen, I want to say thank you so much. Jeffrey Lord, you can always find what he's got to say at the American Spectator. And you've been on top of this from day one, and I really appreciate that. Stay on the line, too, because Stacey wants to talk to you. But thank you so much, Jeffrey Lord.
Thank you.
Hey, happy Memorial Day
weekend
to you. Yeah, thank you. All right, well, you know what? This is Rose. I'm filling in for Sean Hannity today, and we will certainly be back with a lot more after this.
Hannity Headline.
bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you
everywhere you go.
To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
Okay, we have just a little bit of time left, so let's go to Richard from Bonita Springs, Florida. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yes, my point is that isn't it now a very good time to start looking at the fair tax in order to eliminate the IRS and just have a body that would look after that sales tax?
There couldn't be a better time, Richard. There couldn't be a better time. And when you consider this IRS scandal and their abuse of power, is it any wonder that Americans are concerned about how the IRS is going to manage their health care, too? Let's get rid of them now before we have any other problems in the future. You know, Fox News just did a recent poll, by the way, on the subject of health care, and they found that a majority of American voters say that their family would be worse off under the Affordable Care Act, and they think it would be better to go back to the pre-Obamacare health care system. Isn't that amazing?
God,
or is it?
No, it really is time to do away with the IRS.
Yeah, it's time. Absolutely. The flat tax would just mean no need for the IRS at all. I mean, and as I said before, this administration, this scandal with the IRS has confirmed our worst fears about the IRS. I mean, so here we have, you know, this going on. And why not? Why not? Now people are saying, hey, if this is what's happening to those organizations, what's going to happen to us if they're in charge of our health care? I mean, it's quite frightening. And when you think that this poll that was done by Fox News, the majority of American voters, I'm not talking about Republicans. Again, this is the majority of American voters who feel that we need to go back to pre-Obamacare health care systems. So that speaks volumes as well. And we'll be speaking about a lot more things after we come back from this break. Don't go away. Enjoying the kickoff of Memorial Day weekend with Sean's listeners.
We know you never want to miss the Sean Hannity Show. And now you never have to. Just sign up for Hannity Headlines, a bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you on your laptop, your mobile phone, everywhere you go, even to your liberal in-law's place in Vermont.
So, yeah.
And after a few hours of that, you'll be glad you brought Sean along. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
This is Rose Tennant filling in for Sean Hannity today. I'm always so blessed when I have the opportunity to be with his audience. You all are so encouraging. I've appreciated your emails so far. You can get in touch with me at roseunplugged.com. Also, I want to remind you, if you're going to the internet, go to Hannity.com. For Lauren's piece. It's really inspirational, especially for this time of year. And listen, I just want to say thanks to everyone, Lauren, Jonathan, Jason, and of course, over here, Stacy is awesome. I wouldn't want to do anything without Stacy. You know, earlier this month, we were astonished to learn of three girls who were held in captivity in Cleveland, Amanda Berry, Gina DeJesus, and Michelle Knight. The three were allegedly kidnapped by Ariel Castro over 10 years ago. And they were held captive inside his home for that duration. Now, it was Amanda Berry screaming for help that caught the attention of a neighbor on May 6th. That's when this hellish story began to unfold. 10 years is a very long time. And I wonder if anything could have been done to find those girls or any missing child sooner. My guest has the answer to that. He is Dennis Bear. He's the founder of the Bear Foundation, the Bear Find Foundation, I should say. It's a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and their goal is to get the public involved as soon as possible in the search for missing children. So, good afternoon, Dennis. How are you today?
Hi, Rose. I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
You know what? I had to have you on the show, Dennis, because I think, you know, it was just an ugly reminder of what is happening to children out there, and we need to start thinking about what it is we can do, all of us, to get involved and to help find them. And you think that this is something that we need to do right away. And you have an idea behind that, too. Listen, first of all, before we even get to that, I understand that you've been working closely with the family of Gina DeJesus in Cleveland since 2005. And, you know, the thing that concerns me is that all of these girls, Dennis, were found so close to where they were found missing or where they lived. And that's why I think what you're doing at the Bear Find organization, I think that's so important, because if we can start to get the information out there immediately when it happens, we might be in a better place to find those missing children.
you're exactly right, Rose. What this story proves with the girls coming home out of Cleveland is that our children are fighters. These girls fought for 10 years, mm-hmm. and 10 years after they were taken against their will, they were still fighting, and they were still willing to do whatever it took to get home to their families.
Wow.
And we just think, as Americans, if those kids are going to fight, then they're not going to fight alone. We're going to stand beside them and fight with them, because to not do that is just not good enough.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that one of the things that I find interesting is that you have a strategy that you used with Gina's family, for example, and that has actually become the hallmark of the Bear Foundation. And I want to just make sure that people know that's B-A-I-R find, F-I-N-D.org, bearfind.org. And this strategy that you used really kind of supports your motto, and that is more eyes looking means more children found.
Yes. I'm actually a former minor league pitcher. I was drafted by the Chicago Cubs as a right-handed pitcher. And I spent 9 years playing baseball in the minor leagues. And that's where I came up with the strategy that we use and that we used to raise awareness for Gina DeJesus and Amanda Berry. And we worked closely with the family of Gina DeJesus. We scheduled events with major and minor league sports teams where we would feature the profiles and the photos of the area's missing children on the big screen. And we would also have concourse signs at the stadium. And I took Gina DeJesus' mother, Nancy, out to several games, Cleveland Indians game, an Akron Arrows game there in Akron, Ohio, which is AA for the Cleveland Indians. We worked with a minor league affiliate of the Philadelphia Phillies and the Detroit Tigers to raise awareness for Gina. And what we do is very simple. When I was a minor leaguer with the Cubs, I realized two things. Number one, the stadiums and the arenas in every city in this country are where the people are. And we need to take the pictures of missing kids in every city and every area, and we need to put those pictures where the people are. And where the people are year-round in every city is in the stadiums and arenas. And the second part is what you touched on earlier. There are thousands more missing children that are missing right in their own area or in some city in some town in the United States. And this is not a problem that we as Americans should shy away from out of fear. That's not good enough anymore. That's not acceptable. What I realized as a former athlete, and what people who are current athletes and people who are sports fans, whether you're a member of Yankee Nation or Red Sox Nation or Steeler Nation, this is a challenge that we have to rise to. We are Americans. It is not good enough that we have one child missing in our midst, that we are not actively searching for and actively raising awareness for. When a child goes missing, everything should stop immediately, because it does for the family. And that's just the bottom line. If there is one child that is missing, we need to stop what we're doing, and everybody needs to do everything they can to join together and raise awareness for that child and for their family.
And for two reasons, and I mean, that's an excellent point, because I think what a lot of us felt initially when we heard about these three young ladies was what you had said, what victors they were, how brave and strong they were. But in addition to that, the first thing I thought about was, my goodness, this has been going on. They were there for 10 years, so close to home, 10 years. So what I like about your foundation is that you want people to get involved and to contribute and be part of the solution. And, you know, for the most part, people want to know what it is they can do. Now, there is something that you're working on right now, and this is really why I wanted you on the show, because this is fascinating to me. You've got what you call a first response mobile app. And this I think, is necessary for every parent of a small child or even a young teenage child to have. It is, to me, I think it is brilliant. And I would like it if you would explain to the audience exactly what this app does.
Okay, thank you, Rose. Yes, this mobile app that we're developing is a first response mobile app. It is for everybody who has a smartphone. And every single parent in America needs to have this app on their smartphone. It goes to our overall challenge. challenge, which is called Bring Home 100. We are the first organization to set a number goal that we are going to raise awareness for 100 missing children. We're going to raise awareness for missing children until 100 are brought home. And actually, Amanda Berry and Gina DeJesus are numbers 17 and 18 that we featured in sports stadiums and arenas that have been brought home.
Wow.
We've got 82 to go.
Okay.
And this mobile app that we are developing right now, which we need a little bit of help in order to get over the hump and be able to make this app available to the American public, this fills in the crucial 45 minutes from when a child goes missing. That first 45 minutes from when a child is lost is the crucial time. And our app enables the parent of a missing child to, and everybody within a certain area of that parent, to fill in that 45 minutes with key information as to that child's whereabouts. And that's what we're developing now. So we've got a, you know, I really appreciate you bringing me on your show because we need help. We need to reach our goal. We have a goal of $18,000 that we need to raise in order to finalize this mobile app and make it available to the public through sports stadiums and arenas, starting here in Pittsburgh, where I live, with the Pittsburgh Penguins and Pirates and Steelers.
Well, and here's the thing, too. With this app, I mean, the parents, you know, you have a current or recent photo available. The parents themselves can't cover enough ground by themselves without assistance. And, you know, even Amber Alert, which is wonderful and fabulous, it covers a very broad area. Amber Alert has a lot of requirements that have to be met first, too, before an alert can be issued for a missing child. With this, you can get that information out immediately in the immediate area, and that, I think, is essential, especially when we consider that all three of those girls were so close to home.
Absolutely.
Or work. And that, to me, just threw me for a loop. I couldn't believe it. Well, I did want to bring you
Absolutely.
On, Dennis, because you are doing great work in this, and it's so important. And all of us, I think, felt for those young ladies. And if there's anything that any one of us can do, we want to know what it is we can do. So I would encourage listeners to go to bearfind.org. It's BAIRFIND, bearfind.org. And just take a look at the details behind the app that's being proposed and that they're working on right now, and see where you can get involved, because every child is your child. We must be looking out for each other, and people just want to know how they can plug in, Dennis, and you've given them a way to do that, and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Rose. Can you imagine getting an alert on your phone with the photo of a child with what they are wearing today that says that this child is missing within 500 yards of you?
Unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
That's,
I would immediately begin looking for that child. I think what you're doing is God's work, and I appreciate you so much, and the best of luck to you. It's BAIRFIND.org. Hannity.com will have it up there as well. And we just appreciate all the work that you're doing. Oh, and you can get it at roseunplugged.com as well. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you. And good luck with all of this. And I hope you make that money up. I hope you accumulate all the money you need to get that app up and running. I think it's so important.
Thank you very much, Rose. And thank you to the listeners and everybody who's helped us. I want to say a special thank you to Unequal Technologies, who is a Philadelphia-based company who is the future for protection for kids who play sports. They're out to protect kids. They help us. We are out to protect kids and help parents do that.
Hey, listen, I know that you also talked to DeJesus' family. I mean, you're in constant contact with them. How are they all holding up?
Amazingly, they are doing great. I know there are people out there, especially in Cleveland, who know the DeJesus family. This is a true example of a strong, loving, warm, and caring American family. I mean, it's just been my personal privilege and honor to get to know them over the years and to see them demonstrate strength and perseverance, belief in God, and faith that their daughter was alive and needs to be brought home. They fought a battle, and they won, baby. They won big time.
Amen.
It's like I said, it's my honor to know them in life. They are tremendous.
Well, they're lucky to have you in their lives as well. Thank you so much, Dennis. We appreciate your hard work. Keep it up.
Thank you, Rose. Thank you very much.
Bet. We'll be back with more on the Hannity program, kicking off the Memorial Day weekend right after this. Okay, so look, I am taking phone calls, and we've got some time in the next hour or two, so you might want to get in. It's 1-800-941-SHAWN, 1-800-941-SHAWN. You can reach me at roseunplugged.com. I'm going to take Kenny, who's calling from Texas. How are you doing, Kenny?
Yeah, okay. Thank you for taking my call, Rose. Yeah, if we reflect back on Boston and we looked at the helicopters that were there looking at the heat-seeking devices and found that Cerna's brother hanging out in the boat, why can't we do a similar type of approach where we use the helicopters to go and look for heat-seeking images of other houses and neighborhoods and try to find these? It seems like when a child is abducted, they're not found like miles and miles away in different states or whatever. They're normally within a close proximity of the city. And if we launch those helicopters and use that heat-seeking technology, would that be beneficial? And I'd like to ask your caller, I think he's already off, but maybe they could look into that type of technology being used. We use it in the military. We use it in this situation in Boston. What do you think about that? And I'll listen to your comments.
Oh, you're so sweet. Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent idea. And I know that, you know, just as we were talking about with the new app that they have, why that could be a lot more effective than what's being done right now is because a lot of times there are restrictions on how alerts can go out and when. There are requirements that have to be met before an alert can be issued for a missing child. In the case of one of those three girls, I can't think of which one it is right now, they were thought to have been a runaway. I think it was Amanda Berry was thought to have been a runaway. And so they weren't searching for her as a victim of a kidnapping. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, certainly what they used to find the bombers were extremely extraordinary. And I remember being in awe over the whole process and how they were so quickly able to find the brothers and then later the last brother. But, you know, the other thing that he said, and I want to mention this again, Dennis was talking about the De Jesus family, and he talked about their faith and their courage and the personality and the warmth of this family and a loving, close-knit family. You have to think that it was those characteristics of that family that are what kept the De Jesus girl alive and kept her a survivor through everything that she had been through. And I was really touched to hear that about that family, but I'm not at all surprised. So just a reminder, it is bearfind.org, BAIRFIND.org. We will be taking phone calls. The phone number is 1-800-941-SHAWN. And also I encourage you to check out Hannity.com as well to get to listen to the monologue. If you want a copy of it, you can write me through roseunplugged.com. And as always, it's such a pleasure to work with Sean's audience and his staff. And we've had a good time so far this afternoon, and we intend to continue that through the next hour. So don't go away. Stay with us. Get your phone call in during the break so we can get you online and talk to you and see what you're up to. This is the Sean Hannity Show. We'll be right back after this.